What better way to celebrate Trinity Sunday than to receive and bless the precious gift of this new icon of the Trinity? And Patricia, we are so grateful to you. Because of that, I thought I should do something different tonight and take the icon itself as the text for my sermon, which I don't think I've done that before. All the other special days in the church calendar celebrate stories or events in the life of Jesus, but this day, Trinity Sunday, and this icon celebrate a doctrine or a teaching about the nature of God. And at first glance, that may seem somewhat removed from the practical living of our discipleship, but in fact, it is seeking to tell us what God is like. And what we believe about that really changes things. Whether we think God is remote or intimate, vengeful or merciful, angry or generously loving, these are things that shape everything we do. It might come as a surprise to you, but in some ways we can describe the doctrine of the Trinity, the belief that there is only one God, but that that God exists as a community of three persons, as a scientific teaching. But I don't mean by that that you can prove it using scientific technologies. Rather, a scientific hypothesis is a theory put forward to try and explain a reality that is observed and experienced, but which seems not to fit with what we previously understood of reality. And the doctrine of the Trinity is like that. The early church was experiencing God in ways that didn't quite fit their belief that God was only one person, but also didn't fit the idea of there being many different gods. The Trinity is the theory that has made the best sense of the data of experience and continues to do so. But like many theories, many of the theories that today's physicists come up with, it's not easy to put into words or get your head around. Sometimes preachers seem to want to simplify it into a little diagram or a simple analogy, like water existing as liquid, ice and steam or something like that. But these endeavours are usually about as successful as comparing Einstein's theory of relativity to a teacup. The Trinity is a mystery, not a puzzle. Puzzles can be solved, but the more you explore mysteries, the deeper they get. And so one of the things that we are reminded of each Trinity Sunday is that it is impossible to do justice to the nature of God with words. Language is simply not up to the job. It can't capture everything. And so from early times, the church has used icons as a way of engaging another part of our brain in the contemplation of the deep mysteries of God. They are a way of prayerfully putting into colours and shapes the truths that can never be adequately captured by words alone. But it's not an either-or. It's not icons or words. We reach out with both, which is why those who produce the icons traditionally speak of writing an icon rather than painting an icon. It's almost a bit of a kind of playful use of the language there. The original version of this icon of the Trinity was painted or written by a Russian monk named Andrei Rublev about 600 years ago. Most of the biblical references to the Trinity are, of course, in the New Testament, but Rublev took his inspiration from a story in the book of Genesis, where Abraham welcomes three messengers into his home near the tree of Mamre, and so that's the tree that you can see in the background there. Abraham welcomes three strangers, but he addresses them with the singular title, "My Lord." And so Rublev and others saw this as an early glimpse of the triune God. Rublev's Trinity is widely regarded as the greatest of all Russian icons, and the Russian icons are generally regarded as the greatest of the family of icons. And it's a great privilege for us to receive this newly completed version of this icon. A Russian by the name of Pavel Florensky once, perhaps only partly tongue-in-cheek, said, "There exists the icon of the Trinity by St. Andrei Rublev. Therefore, God exists." In terms of logic, that makes absolutely no sense at all. But part of the point of icons is that some truths do lie beyond logic and words. And so, as an expression of praise and worship, I think he puts it rather well. One of the first things that you notice when you begin to read this icon is that the three faces all look the same. We're not even sure who is who. Some people have concluded that there are clues in the clothes and the body postures as to which member of the Trinity each figure represents, but they're not all agreed, and we don't know for sure what Rublev thought. And I don't know what Patricia thinks either, but we'll find out. But even if we did know, even if we did, the fact remains that the icon speaks to us of the way in which the three members of the Trinity are images of one another. We've heard a bit about this from John's Gospel recently. Jesus said things like, "Those who have seen the Son have seen the Father," and that the Spirit will take what is mine, what is of me, and reveal it to you.
Hey.
No. So the icon reminds us that the love and mercy that we have seen in Jesus are not some kind of foil for an angry, vengeful Father. All we have seen in Jesus is equally true of the Father and the Spirit. And what we see very clearly depicted in all three here is love, a radical love based on mutual trust and submission. When you contemplate the three here, you'll see that each seems to be looking at the other with an expression of love, reverence, even deference or submission. But it is thoroughly mutual. It seems to flow around the circle. It is not hierarchical. It's the very opposite of rivalry. The love we see here draws us to one another and unites us in communion, whereas rivalry always drives us apart and fractures us into isolated bits. One of the reasons that we can say that God is love is that we have seen that God exists in this constant communion of love and has done so even before there was anything else in the universe to love. Love is never alone. And in this community, or maybe I should say this triunity, there is a constant mutual giving and receiving of love that would be complete even if it remained forever self-contained. But another thing that we see revealed in this icon is that God's love does not remain as a closed circle. The opening chapters of the Bible tell us of the overflowing creative love of God, which so longed to share itself that God began creating, and that God created us, humanity, in the image of God, of the God who is Trinity. And so in the same way that we see the three bearing the image of one another, so we too bear the image of God and are created to participate in this flowing communion of mutual love and trust. This image bearing is not intended to be at a distance, though. In Jesus, one of the persons of the Trinity has become human and so taken our humanity into the heart of the Trinity itself. And having taken on our humanity, Jesus now invites us to share in his divinity, in his divine relationships with the Father and the Spirit. And we can see this invitation in the icon as, from the vantage point of the viewer, a place opens up for us at the front of the table. This is not a closed meeting, but a table of radical hospitality. We are invited to complete the picture, to take our place at the table, to join the circle of communion and share in the extravagant hospitality of God. As Andre Nguyen said of this icon, it seems to beckon. It seems to say, join us. Join us in the circle of true love where there is joy forevermore. When you do that, when you accept the invitation and take your place, all sorts of things begin to change. That's why when we come to the table each week, our words of welcome include a hint of warning. Come because Jesus offers himself to you, and you want to offer yourself in return. When you offer yourself to this relationship, you will not escape unchanged. If you begin to regularly eat at the table of a family who have welcomed you in, you are gradually drawn into the flow of conversation and life that characterizes their regular gathering. At first, you're not quite able to make out all the patterns and relationships. But if you're there regularly over a period of time, the patterns begin to become clear and you begin to find your place in that flow of relationship. All the more so at this table, where the relationships are so deep and mutual and transformative. So if the love and community and hospitality which we see God beckoning us to enter in this icon are fundamental to who God is and to who we become when we are drawn into it and have the divine image renewed in us, then they are also fundamental to who we truly are and to how we are called to live in the world as people who sit at this table. When one member of the Trinity becomes human here on earth, the whole Trinity is caught up in suffering the tragic brokenness of humanity. Into this eternal and unbroken communion comes the searing pain of the divine Son suffering a God-forsaken death, the divine parent suffering the death of a beloved child, and the Spirit binding the two together through agonized, unspoken sighs. Into the horror of every human suffering, the divine love reaches, calling us, beckoning us, yearning for us to respond and come back to the table, to the place of healing, of home, of refinding ourselves in the communion of love. And in the Trinity, all our suffering is held or contained in the cup that does not pass Jesus by, the cup in which the blood of Christ's suffering is given for the life of the world. And so in the icon we see not only a cup on the table, but the inner lines of the outer two figures also create the shape of a cup. And one of the reasons that people usually conclude that the middle one is Jesus is because he's in the cup. When we are drawn to take our place at this table, we are drawn right into the cup itself, into the cup where Jesus offers himself to us in outpoured suffering love, so that the healing can come to a wounded humanity and hope can enter a dying world. The icon reminds us then that we are gathered to the table at the cost of Christ's suffering and death, to be fed with Christ's overflowing love for the world. And so while the icon shows us how we are being drawn in the same move, it is showing us how the circle that we are being drawn into is a circle that is constantly open and reaching out. This is the circle that remains unbroken while sending the Son into the world, and then constantly sending the Spirit into the world, and now sending us into the world. As we heard in the Gospel reading that we heard tonight, we are sent, blown by the wind of the Spirit, and we neither know where from nor where to, but we do know why. That the flowing circle of love around the table might continue to expand and heal the wounds and feed the deepest hungers of all the world. Ultimately, then, in this icon, God is calling us to become the icon. As we are drawn into this communion of love that is the Trinity, we as the church, as a communion of people who gather around the table, are called to be what the icon is, a beautiful, beckoning, inviting revelation of the self-giving love and mutual submission and radical hospitality of the God who is known to us in three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, one God, one Mother of all creation, as in the beginning, so now and forever. Amen.